Round up the usual suspects.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Low and open stocks and jacks. Have tomorrow in front of the board. SP futures up 184. It's 184. NASDAQ futures up 843. It's because of the big tariff deal that was announced. Where the tariffs are going to end up higher than they were to start with, but evidently everybody thinks it's great. We have the tariff numbers. Greg, help me out here. Went from the 100 and something down to the 10% everybody's going to have, but then still the 20%. Fentanyl tariff. Don't know if we're going to actually try and stop the fentanyl. We're just going to charge China for it. But well, it's all kind of in flux, wouldn't you say? And I think anybody front ran this one, they would never do that.
Markets are happy.
Well, yeah, markets are happy. For the moment, we'll see. They definitely are, though. So you definitely want to be long this morning. No doubt about that. What's your view?
And from the commodities perspective, I mean, We've been seeing more selling in the oil and a lot of resistance. And
not today. Oil's up $2.
Yeah, they've blown through it all. So OPEC was right. There's, I guess, more demand coming. And we, equity-wise, I mean, we're back to where we were before the market really got scared. So
pretty much, yeah.
So, you know, you only see the biggest rallies during bear markets. I don't know. Maybe there's some cheap puts out there I'm going to be looking for today.
Well, at the end of the day, we are, in 2024, the U.S. imported $439 billion worth of goods from China. So what is a 30% tax on that? $130 billion?
I'll
do the math. It's quick enough.
Yeah. I mean, so what I'm looking at right now is if I'm up 15 or 20% for the year, I'm taking 1 or 2% of that and just making sure that 15% doesn't disappear.
That's what makes you a professional trader. It's never going to... Trump's just getting warmed up, buddy. It's just getting warmed up. You won't see a retail trader, a retail person selling a share today. You know that.
Oh. I mean, I'm not sure I'm selling anything, but I'm, you know, picking up some cheap protection if I can get it. It's come all the way back, hasn't it? Where did we start?
Not exactly. We tapped out on the Qs last February at like 5:39. This is the Qs. And we went down to 4:15, maybe.
Yeah. Fortunately, I'm not in that one. But
and now we're back up to 5:08.
Yeah.
It's been that kind of a run is absolutely, in my opinion, not healthy. I don't see how this, whatever the goals are to this, they're very mystifying to me. What if you actually went out and got a loan to build a new factory?
I'm sure plenty of companies are really considering those long-term costs and, you know, the benefits associated with setting up shop here. But in terms of just a trading perspective, you know, protecting or at least being ready for another downdraft, I mean, I think that's the smart thing to do. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a gift that it's come back up like this.
But yeah, you would think, I mean, you know, it's funny, there was a as used to trade on the trading floor. You used to give people grief and they'd give it to you. That if you bought a stock at 60, all of a sudden it went to 55 and you're sitting there going, oh man. You absolutely promise the big guy upstairs that it ever got back to 60 again, you'd sell it. And as soon as it gets back to 60, immediately you think, I was right in the first place, I'll hang on to it, right?
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, that's kind of the way. But I see a lot of stuff breaking down across the economy. And now, at the end of the day, we're talking about a 30% tariff that essentially wasn't there. And this is a tax. It absolutely is a tax, and the tax is on you. And this is not, I mean, you know, what I say Friday, Trump is turning into Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer, it's a lot of fun to paint the fence. I don't know if you remember that. Have you ever read Tom Sawyer? You know, he's got everybody else painting the fence because he told him what a good time it was. At the end of the day, these tariffs are going to pay for tax cuts to Trump and his friends.
I mean, one side of me thinks this is completely on purpose to base the currency, try to lower the interest rates. You know, that's the only way out of really a debt trap. And the other part of me thinks, you know, we're just scared, and it's going to go farther each way, depending on, maybe it's both. But having the S&P fly around like this, you know, it's the traders' best gift ever. So keeping the eye on the prize, I guess, would be the main goal. Whether it's, you know, 10% return a year or 20% or whatever you're shooting for, you know, at the end of the day, that, I guess, really is individual. And if you can hit your targets, I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking the rest of the year off or going to play golf.
Well, the easy thing to do is just protect it, like you say.
Then you protect it, and you hope it keeps going. All my protection paid off earlier, and now it looks like if you put it back on, then maybe it pays off again. I don't know. You get 40% a year instead of 20 or.
Well, we'll be rolling some puts up today. There's no doubt about that. I mean, which is a good move, which is a good thing. You know, so you know, it's you wonder what exactly is going on, and at the end of the day, Greg, you know, it's this. What's the...
We're lucky.
Casablanca, I mean, it's still the same old story. Tales of Love and Glory. I mean, I went up to one of the guy upstairs last night. I haven't had a conversation with him in a long time, so we went out last night. And of course, we run into one of our buddies up at the Tripoli, and he's kind of a character, but really a smart guy. And he owns a whole bunch of stuff, and the guy's got... I don't want to ask, I think he's got more money than God, but he's telling me how much money he was making last night on his... well, I would say Bitcoin stuff, but whatever, all the different ones.
Yeah.
And he says to me, he goes, "This is so easy." I go, "What do you mean?" I mean, we don't trade that stuff for people. Our people are not into that. So, and when I give the report in the morning, I'll say Bitcoin. But there's really a lot of them, right? So, it's not my shtick, so I don't really go in there. But I don't know what I'm talking about. Well, it's not always so obvious. And he says to me, he goes, "Yeah, this is so scary that this is allowed to be and happen." And he goes, "The bleep show in Washington in terms of any kind of morals." He goes, "But it's," he says, "all I do," he says, "there's a new one of these things all the time." He says, "I get in on the ground floor and the next day I sell." He goes, "It's a pump and dump, just like banks used to do in the 20s, just like dot-coms were in the 90s. It's just the pump and dump. You get in when they pump, and you turn it." He goes, This has never changed. It just, the things just change, but the people doing it know what they're doing. And if you understand the sine wave, get in and get out as quick as you can. It's a layup.
Yeah,
but how do you get on the ground floor of these things? I don't have no idea.
The smart, or you know, quote smart money is taking small shots on those small cryptos or whatever, and then if they 10x, 20x, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, and he's gone.
And fortunately, you know, those type of discipline, you know, maybe it goes 100x, not in it for that. So part of like the discipline, I guess, to that strategy would be, yes, we're going to make 20%, we're going to be happy. And then we're going to do it again and try to do it four or five times in a row. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got significant returns that maybe took you a whole year with a whole lot more money for treasuries or whatever it is. So I don't know what the appropriate allocation is to call it speculative. But if you can 20x something, you know, you only really need to put 0.5% of your portfolio to have a great year.
Well, what do you make of The thing getting crushed this morning is gold and silver. Now, do you think gold's a buy here? If it's down like 100 bucks, 100 and some bucks.
For me, I would say if the premium has gone way up, I'm probably looking to short premium in gold, whether it be the puts or I'm not sure, you know, buying, chasing it up here is the greatest idea, but again, the time horizon comes into play, meaning is this a 1 month trade, is this a 1 year trade, or is this a 10 year trade? So like that's kind of how the sizing would work. Depending on, you know, how much money you really need to put to work, or how much your gains for this year or, you know, the past 5 years are, you kind of want to balance out. If you've got a, you know, if you're up 30%, and how much has it gone up?
What, gold?
Yeah,
it's gone up quite a bit. Well, it's gone up as much as like the dollar's gone down.
Yeah, same. Yeah. So if you're up 10 or 20% and the market's flat, what's, you know, how much more are you looking for versus how much are you risking? So I don't know if you've...
Well, it's a relative thing. If we continue to push, if we grow the money supply over 5% a year, we're probably going to get 5 to 10% a year to gold. And why wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. It's if you have a bunch of gains so far, it's harder to keep going.
Yeah, it's harder to keep going.
You don't want to necessarily risk.
But you would think that they would feel the same way about the dollar, but they don't. You know, we pushed 40% into the system. You would think that we would have enough money in the system now, especially if we're supposedly fighting inflation, which we're not. I mean, you would think that would be enough, but it's not. We're right back on the same schedule.
And the cleanest dirty shirt argument comes back there. And the privilege of being the reserve,
well,
is
okay,
how it affects.
So here's whenever I have a conversation like this with anybody, and I say the dollar, everybody who's a trader, everybody who watches TV, if you talk to Rick Santelli and the rest of the guys, and Rick's a good guy, they're going to say, what are you talking about? It's the dollar versus the euro versus the pound versus the franc versus the yen. It's never what I'm talking about. I'm always talking about the dollar versus your car, the dollar versus gold, the dollar.
One unit of incremental labor.
I'm talking about dollar against all other goods. And nobody thinks of it that way. And that, I think, is the problem, Greg. It's not the dollar versus the euro. It's the dollar versus how much you have to pay for your next car repair. Everybody thinks that the cost of the dollar car repair has gone up. It hasn't. The value of the dollar in your pocket's gone down. But nobody thinks that way. It never will. In Europe, they do think that way. Because they've been around exchanges, especially somebody older from Europe, who had the Krona and the Deutschmark and all the other stuff, and every time you walk 50 feet, you had to change them. You realized it wasn't the stuff you were buying, it was the stuff in your pocket. And Americans have never felt that way, and probably never will. And maybe that's a good thing. And that's assuming the dollar stays...
You know, you have incentives and things that make you think that way, and the shocks to the dollar have been significantly less and beneficial, actually, compared to the shocks that they experienced probably in the wars and
yep.
More so. Not surprising that we kind of feel that way. What changes that would be something that maybe goes, if the current volatility is 6%, you know, we're not going to start thinking about it until it at least gets to 6% or 10%, and then we start thinking, uh-oh.
But we don't think over the
probably overcorrect the other way.
We don't think over the long term, because I'm not excoriating anybody. I'm just saying that you don't. Why would we think that way? We're from the Midwest. All we've ever had is dollars in our pocket. Hopefully a couple of Benjamins, not just all Washingtons. But to try and explain, Lucy, to an American that if you retired with $1 million and you put it in the bank at like 1% or something 6 years ago,
yeah,
your $1 million is now worth $500,000.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, but nobody think, what do you mean? I still got $1 million.
Yeah, not only does that hurt purchasing power-wise, but that hurts way more emotionally. You don't want to think about that. That's
nobody thinks about it. Why yeah. would you?
Because it hurts.
The single biggest difference, in my opinion, between this inflationary bubble, when it's not a bubble, it's still there, over the last 4 or 5 years, make that probably six, huh? Almost, since we started 2020, and the 70s and 80s, which you're too young, but, you know, Grandma Pappas was able to go down to the bank. If the inflation was 10, she put her money in the bank and she got 12.
Yeah.
You were always a percent or two higher than the inflation rate.
Yeah, now.
This time, you were way below it. So that's what makes me think this time was incredibly planned, and you fleeced the hell out of your own population in terms of buying power.
Absolutely. And that's been a part of it since, what, 71?
No. I'm saying in 71, the people who got hurt in 71 were, if you didn't own assets, like if you didn't own the house or you didn't, that kind of thing. But if you had money in the bank, you didn't get hurt at all. Or this time you had money in the bank, you got hurt the most. It's a massive difference. And this time people will say, "Whoa, man, you just had to be in the market." I mean, as a money manager for people that I care about, you can't just take somebody who's 80 years old and say, "Wow, man, you don't need any fixed income at all. It's all going to the market, 90%. Granted, the people who are 80 that did that did better than the people went in the... boy, it might not have worked out that way, right?
The 60-40 or whatever, yeah. I guess. It's in terms of keeping up with inflation, there's a few ways to do it. Maybe the ideal way would have been 5 or 10%, the riskiest, like Nvidia and
yeah.
the Magnificent Seven, and then the rest in maybe, I don't know, the rest in just short-term securities, I guess.
Well, today, anybody's going to ask in the last year or so.
That probably would have gotten you 6 or 8%.
But how many people have money in treasuries right now? Warren Buffett. He's got
well, single let's space. Let's define money in treasuries.
We have a lot of clients that are 50% in treasuries this year, since they're 4 yeah. or 5%.
He's
however, every one of those clients is...
He's definitely not 50%. His,
I understand that, yeah. but my point is people are in treasuries because they're a little concerned. Now, today, boy, oh boy, do you really want to be in treasuries? The answer is no.
No. The Berkshire balance sheet, minus the float, I want to say, is, you know, they have 3 to 4 years of operating earnings in the tank.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're earning $1 million a year or whatever, $100,000 a year, or your business is earning or you're earning $100,000 a year, you know, do you have that $400 in the bank? Like that's how much they have in the bank just sitting around in addition to all their income and assets. So perspective-wise, I would say they're much more resilient than the next company because as a percentage of their, you know, call it market cap, their 30% is in short-term securities. So if your business is worth $1 million, do you have $300,000 in cash in the bank or in short-term securities? Like that's what they're ready for. I'm not sure Apple, I'm not sure other, you know, AAA companies or
there aren't very many AAA.
Yeah, there's only like two or whatever, Microsoft and
like Microsoft Johnson has a chance and Johnson. Johnson yeah. Say, yeah. I don't think Exxon and most people are anymore.
Nope. So, you know, and Berkshire isn't either, but in terms of, you know, who are you following, who's ready and who's not ready to take advantage of any dips, you would think that Berkshire would have been buying the last dip, but it looks like they really haven't. So does it hurt in the short term? Yeah. But, you know, who knows what's coming, because when we get volatility, you know, everything's pretty transparent in terms of within a year.
Well, let's say
VIX is 25, you know, we got a plan for that 25 downdraft or 25 updraft, 25% down or 25% up this year. So if we've moved zero, we could do it all over again. I mean,
well, why do you think a day like this? This is why the market has behaved for a long time. A day like this, which shows incredible volatility, to be honest with you, from the dip down, we went from 525 to 425 to 507 in the space of 10 weeks?
Right.
Anybody? So now all of a sudden all's okay? So,
well, but okay. I don't know what, you know, okay or not okay, but, you know, looking at where you, where your balance is and where the risk is before versus after, very well could be nobody or some people have done nothing, and so they're just saying, okay, we're back to the beginning. Maybe that's better for your mental health, but in terms of planning, you know, the VIX tells us that, well, I don't know where the VIX prints this morning, it's going to probably be lower, but if the VIX is printing 20-25, you just try to be ready for that 25% move over the course of the next year, because that's what, you know, that's what they're telling us.
Well, now we're down to 20 as of today.
Right, so in terms of what are we ready for, or what should we be ready for, the market is saying you'd be ready for a 20% down or 20% up, which is kind of where we were at the beginning.
Well, okay, we've got
and now, you know, that metric was 50 a few weeks ago. So not only was it lower, but we needed to be ready for a 50% move lower. That's probably why people like the pension funds and people like Berkshire, who are much longer term oriented, kept a lot of cash, because when you're down 20% from here, and you need to prepare for another 50% just in case, because that's what the market's telling you, you know, maybe the appropriate thing to do is keep it all still in cash.
Well, we got to go to break here, but at the end of the day, we're going to do all this crap to China, 120%. Now, there wasn't really anything to start with, right? So now we're back to 30, which is a lot higher than we started with. Are we talking a net positive or negative for people in this country?
Fortunately, really, we don't even need to... I'm scared to say this, you know, but we actually don't need to understand that.
Why?
That's kind of a luxury, but in terms of what the outcomes are, we get to look at the live VIX, we get to look at the live prints of everything, and that stuff is usually getting priced in daily.
We were sold that all of a sudden everybody's going to be making stuff back here. Is this going to do that or not? What did it do? Is it going to stop the fentanyl? Is it going to stop the child labor? Is it going to stop any of the stuff anybody cares about? And the answer is no.
Well, it doesn't really matter, because we can see the effects of what's going on live in the markets.
Okay, it doesn't matter to you and me trading.
No, it doesn't.
But it matters to everybody else who's listening for the reasons for all this stuff.
Yeah, the reasons are... There's a lot of reasons, and we can find a lot of correlations and a lot of noise. Ultimately, as people put their positions on, we're going to see it reflected in the pricing and the option pricing.
Right. Well, we got to break, but you got to remember that 2% of the world is talking in the terms you and I are. The rest of the people have, like, real jobs. And they're being told they're way better off at the end of the day on this.
Part of the reason that... The only 2% of the people really make money is, or at least trading, and the others have benefited from the inflation. But the asset holders, you know, you have to understand and what to prepare for.
Well, that's true.
And what to prepare for is completely transparent. We're lucky that we do live in those kind of markets where they still are transparent. And we do have semi-decent metrics.
What do you mean transparent? The people who knew this was coming all got long before you did.
Right. That part is in the shadows. But in terms of, it's hard to bully around.
You know what?
Volatility.
We got to go to break. But there was this. I don't know how you could do a study like this. Back years ago, instead of saying people were transparent, bleeps used to. Whenever somebody was in front of Congress or a congressman or a politician would say, quite frankly. Some wag did a study and said like 60% of the time it was a lie. I mean, after somebody said, the minute somebody says they're going to be transparent, it means they're not, in my opinion.
Well, if you can try to move the gold market, you could try to move the bond market, but I think we've got a pretty good visual of what happens throughout, and we're lucky that it's almost almost instant now because of, you know, modern telecom.
That's the beauty of it. I get to get in first. I get to get out in 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's been a huge thing, especially since fiber optic and a whole lot. But there's always been grifters.
Front running is new. SP Futures up 173. NASDAQ Futures up 788. We're pretty much at the top here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark. And we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Lone Wolf, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Matt Byrne on the board. Greg Pappas in studio. SP Futures up 172. NASDAQ Futures up 788. Dow Futures up 1,049. This is all because we did the pump and dump on ourselves here, it appears. We have a deal with China. At least a temporary deal where the tariffs are going back to 30%. So we're cheering the fact that we now have 30% tariffs when we didn't have them. They're going to have 10% tariffs on us. Very strange world we've got going here. But by the way, if you're long today, you're happy as a clam, and you know some of our clients will be happy. Well, I don't think we're going to be too happy in the gold areas. Gold's getting slammed. Over in Europe, at the DAX up 71 only. It's 0.3%. FTSE up 30.3%. CAC around up 93.12%. Why do you suppose they're not celebrating as much, Greg? I'm just out of curiosity. They are not. Nikkei up 140. Hang Seng up 681. That's 3%. Shanghai up 27.8. So I don't know how these guys are better off than when they started, because now they got a 30% tariff when they didn't have it. But somehow or another, I guess.
And it's higher input costs.
Yeah, and higher input costs. I don't sort of get that. But it's not up to me. Bonds up 7 basis points, 4.46. That's as high as they've been in a while. The bond up 8 basis points, 2.63. Japan, you got to explain this to me, up 10 basis points, 1.45. Is that the biggest move they've had in like 30 years?
Now we got to look at the currency.
That's unreal. Yeah, we'll look at that. Well, first oil. 10-year. I just had a 10-year. Oops. Oil up 244, 63.46, making that buy at 55.50 last Monday when Greg was in here. Even better, eh, Greg? You were still riding that or what? You got the Brent up 236, 66.27. Natural gas down 4 cents, 375. Arbob up 5 cents, 215. Gold. Whack, whack, whack on the gold, down 120, 32.23. Silver down 51 cents. That was worse earlier. It was down 80 or something. 32.40. Foreign exchange, we'll see what it's doing here. The dollar is actually up a chunk here. The euro is down to 111. It was 113 last week. We've talked many times about 2% moves in currencies during a week are just not healthy, but we seem to be doing it all the time. Same way with the British pound, 131 now, it was 133. Bitcoin down at 193, but still at 104,343. So the artificial stocks are all doing well. Matt, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Currently 6:38 a.m. on May 12th, 2025. Let's look at traffic first. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to the Jane Byrne Interchange at 31 minutes. Outbound at 25. Inbound on the Dan Ryan from 95th to JB at 14 minutes. Outbound at 11. In weather, we're looking at 54 degrees at Midway and 51 at O'Hare, high of around 78 today, continuing our trend from the weekend with mostly sunny skies, humidity at 74%. Tonight, scattered showers and a low of 61. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 82 degrees right now, breezy and hot with a high of 100 degrees today.
Wow, is this their first 100-degree day?
Yeah, it's getting pretty gnarly down there. We got sports for you. MLB yesterday, Cubs played against the Mets and lost. That was 6-2 final score. Cubs at 23 wins this season and 18 losses. They'll host the Miami Marlins tonight at 6:40 p.m. Meanwhile, White Sox beat Marlins yesterday. Final score was 4-2. Sox back on Tuesday against Cincinnati. In the NBA semifinals, West semifinals saw Thunder beat Nuggets 92-87, and in the East, Pacers outpaced Cavaliers 129-109. Tonight, Knicks at Celtics at 6:30, and Timberwolves versus Warriors at 9 p.m. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed, yeah.
We might have Mr. Murphy calling in and talk about India and Pakistan at some point. Hope he does.
We'll look morning, Tom. Morning,
how are you?
Greg?
John, all kinds of things to talk about. We had our list of things before we even saw this, but this is interesting. Markets are way up, as we've been talking about, based on this China deal that essentially gets us back to sort of where we were, only with a higher tariff. And I don't know, John, I guess it's too soon to tell. It certainly was not enough time for anybody to build a new business, right? And now we end up with essentially buying stuff from China. Doesn't appear that we're attacking any of the problems that we talk about on the show, meaning child labor and slave labor and pollution and all those kinds of things. And all we end up with is a 30% tax on U.S. people. And I don't know, was that the mess all along? That's what we're trying to do, John, or what?
I think pausing them is, you know, it's an indication that there's further negotiations. We don't know what will happen during those. But I would say having negotiations is a luxury when it comes to Chinese, because there ain't been much negotiating with them for a long time.
Well, I mean, we're not going to negotiate any of this stuff. We just make them more or less anxious to do all the stuff in the South China Sea or Taiwan. I mean, those are the problems. Does this even address that?
Well, it's fentanyl and other stuff, too. That's the problem. The Chinese have been, you know, intransigent on, so it remains to be seen what kind of bargaining goes on. But the fact that this, you know, both sides cried uncle with the expectation that there would be some kind of follow-up in order to, you know, not go down that path, you know, right away again. But, you know, I hope that, you know, that this is a sign that there's a willingness to do business or to negotiate. The extent of those negotiations is what's going to be important. But getting them to the table, Tom, is the big deal.
What makes you think that the people who cried uncle weren't our guys?
Well, we have to do it too in order to, you know, reach some kind of detente in this. So,
but I mean, I'm talking about all weekend. Every time I turn the radio on, it was some group, someplace, complaining about how they're out of business. They might as well shut their store at 100% China tariff. You don't think that the calls were going out to representatives and senators all weekend and all last week? What makes you think
it's nothing like what was going on in China, though.
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, but who the hell knows? Who do you call over there?
Who answers the phone?
Yeah, who answers the phone? You're probably taking your number down. Where are you located exactly? We'll be there in 10 minutes with our machine guns. That's not a good thing. Hey, all kinds of stuff on the board for today. By the way, I hope everybody had a happy Mother's Day, or at least a remembering happy Mother's Day. Because obviously a lot of people, their mothers aren't still around, but still part of their lives, I assume. I thought it was somewhat interesting. My brother had a dinner for everybody, and my nephew's wife, really bright lady, and she teaches high school math. I won't say what district, but it's in a suburb of Chicago. And Jan, if you'd have been there, you'd have been absolutely appalled that we've reached the point here where there's they really want to get rid of all final testing. Right now, the seniors don't take any finals. And I said, well, why is that? And she goes, well...
Because then you would have to fail people.
Yeah, you have to fail people. Which is, if you fail somebody, or somebody's about to fail, you can offer them a 3-day summer class to catch up. But at the end of the 3 days, there's still no test to see whether you did catch up. So the whole purpose is just move people through and not really care whether or not they know anything or not. And the parents seem somewhat okay with that. I mean, the weird part is, she said it's mostly a Hispanic area, or not all of it, but it's just the parents, you know, maybe just aren't into it, especially with the girls. They don't seem to even care, because that's not what girls do. I mean, girls get married and they have kids. And I just was trying to contrast it, seeing as it was Mother's Day. I mean, my mother was a huge proponent of education. As were most of the mothers on the South Side when we grew up. It just seemed that way. And she grew up in the 30s, and she goes, and her parents, she goes, the thought of sending homework home to be helped at home, that wasn't going to happen. And I was explaining to this lady, I said, in those days, the teachers took a totally different view of the world. Their idea was, you have somebody for 5 hours, your job, it had to do with health relation issues, it had to do with how to cut your toenails, how to hygiene, all kinds of stuff was all taught in the school, as was a lot of shop classes, how to be a carpenter, how to do a bunch of stuff. So, but you never, my mother said, we never got homework. If there was something to read, you read it for an hour in class, maybe got up, stand, shook around a little bit so you got the circulation going, sat down, and maybe either talked about it or you wrote up what you just read. Because the idea of sending, if it was math homework, you did these 5 problems in class, then everybody corrected them in class. I mean, she goes, the perception was when you came out, even in those days, when you came out 8th grade, you could do all the math, and you weren't going to do calculus, but you did all the math, you could read and write, you knew your civics, you knew your history, and you knew geography. She goes, now what is the idea now? You pump people through, you don't care if they know anything or don't. You don't even tell the parents whether they're learning or they're not. Where did we get this, Jan? I just don't get it. How can you see, on the one hand, you know, not that there's any correlation between markets to the moon and everything's fine for some percentage of the people, and on Friday night, every night it seems like I run into somebody that, Friday night I run into a guy who's, he works down here for one of the exchanges, and he's sort of a Notre Dame person. His brother, 2 brothers, his father and his grandfather all went to Notre Dame. So his daughter, evidently, it's a 35 on the ACT, is almost a straight 4-point. She's on the fencing team, has another couple extracurriculars. She gets bleep camped by Notre Dame. They don't want her because she's just another South Side girl. And geography-wise, they have a quota now for people from, like, the South Side of Chicago. So there's never going to be another year where, like, 8 or 9 people come from Marist by high school and go to Notre Dame. Well, let's see, 4 or 5 of them became doctors. 2 or 3 became lawyers. Then there's me, a traitor. But, I mean, all of us, I think we're somewhat of a credit to the school in some ways. well, no, we don't want that anymore. We got to make sure somebody from this place and that place. And by the way, we're gonna toss you out just because you're from the South Side.
Well, what's their potential to donate back to the university?
I think all these people have given money.
Well, the question now for those, I call them hedge funds with academic and sports departments. They got to think about what's the ideal candidate who's most likely to give back.
I think if it wasn't for the South Side of Chicago, Notre Dame wouldn't be here. What do you think, John?
That was in the past.
Okay.
They got a big brand. They got lots of big spotlight on them.
In your cynical view of the world, by the way, you're absolutely correct. It's we're not the slave of the last dollar. We're the slave of the next dollar.
Just
right?
Looking for the incentives. Yeah, what are the incentives?
Slave of the next dollar.
Yeah, the incentives are if they want to continue their, what's their budget?
Well, I have no idea. It's not public.
Harvard's budget is like, what, $6 billion a year?
Harvard's got hospitals and stuff. Notre Dame doesn't.
If they've got, I think Harvard made about $50 million on a $6 billion budget last year.
you're talking about their endowment.
No, that's their budget per year. Right, so, if Notre Dame has this enormous budget that they have to fund, I don't know what they're doing, but they have to think about where those dollars are coming in from. And if you're just a regular doctor or lawyer, you might not be writing that $500,000 donation. The tuition is not...
Have you ever heard anything more cynical, Jen?
The tuition isn't enough anymore.
I'll give you a cynical pen. I think the phenomenon you're talking about is kind of the very expectable result from the way people in our cohort of people, Southsiders, Christians, Catholics, whatever, were treated by upper echelon colleges outside of the Notre Dame sphere. So you take the Ivy League, you take even a lot of the state schools too, where it not only was it not advantageous to be a Christian, but I think it was a downright disincentive or reason to exclude you. We don't want your kind. That's certainly what I experienced talking to people who applied at such places, and it seemed like the only credential they lacked was that they, were not Christian. Had they been a non-Christian, it would have really enhanced their chances and probably gotten them in.
Did you get anybody? Do you have anybody go to Harvard from your high school?
Yes, in a class behind me, one student
we had a guy in our class. He played basketball, was really, really bright, a guy named John McCambridge. I'm still a friend. I haven't seen him in ages. But
these places are just private equity funds. And
they are now.
The students are just...
They're not going to tell you that.
Partial investments.
In their mind, they're not, Greg.
No, we all know. Come on. Who's running those places? Penny Pritzker?
What we're seeing now, with the whole scandal in the Columbias and the Harvards in the news these days, for their ridiculous politics, the response to that among if you were a family with some money and you had an intelligent child,
some money is a hindrance to them because then they have to give you aid.
Well, yeah, and they'd rather get international.
It looks good.
Bring them in on some visa program and screw the Americans in the process too. But I think that the response of people here was what you'd expect it to be. If you have no chance at these places, why are you giving them an admission fee just to be rejected? So what that did, and this was a process that was also kind of worsened by the fact that lots of private smaller institutions closed just because they couldn't compete and they couldn't attract students if they were in the small town all the reasons that go into why there's been such a shaking out in higher ed. But it amped up all of the competition to get into places like Notre Dame or Boston College or you name it, so that those have now, they've done their job too well in some sense, that they've made it so they're the school of first choice. If you have credentials that you had no control over, your surname, your ethnicity, your race, whatever, so you have applied to those places in greater numbers, and they have to reject more and more people because they can do it you know, they're not expanding. Notre Dame hasn't expanded really at all since you and I went.
Well, that would dilute the value of their signal. You know, they're graduates, and we only have this many. In terms of potential, when you have the internet, when you have especially now Zoom and all that stuff, I don't know what the reach multiplier is, but you can reach a lot more people in terms of traveling, tuition. Yeah, I'm not sure what their goal is, but if you start diluting the value of the degree, well, that's a disaster in terms of, even if it gets them somewhat more money, because they need that signal for prestige and to be maintained. Tuition for, I'm not sure, the large endowments, I'm not sure how much of a percentage of tuition is for their actual income, but if you have a...
Well, they always spend, it depends on how you, always depends on how you look at it.
Their operating budgets are too big to just depend on tuition.
They're very similar. Actually, one thing I didn't want to bring up today, it's amazing how when you do stuff on the show, John, and my theme, although nobody could ever knows what the theme is, I guess. The theme is everything depends on everything else. I mean, everything is connected, which you don't see normally in the news. When you see what happened, they'll tell you something costs whatever it is because they can make it cost whatever they want. And an undergrad student, for instance, if you were to sit there and say, okay, the person has five classes, there's an average of 25 people in the class, and here's what we pay the professor. So the variable cost of that is X. And oh, by the way, they live in a dorm, and the variable cost of that is X. And then they're going to say, well, wow, we got all this other stuff going. We've got the arts, the athletics. We've got this building. We got that building. And oh, by the way, we got kids over. We're maintaining four or five things overseas. That none of that stuff affects you. For a long period of time, and John, the undergraduate population essentially paid for the graduate population, right, for a long period of time.
Right.
It's all about, I don't know if you guys were driving around this weekend, but one of the things on News Radio 78, and I'll give him some kudos, is some guy who is, I don't know where he's from, but sounded like he might have been African American, but that doesn't matter. He has stage 3 cancer, and evidently in both lungs. And for I don't know if anybody's been paying any attention, but it appears that I don't know how they do it, but there have been some double lung transplants for people in stage 3 and stage 4 cancer, and I don't know where else they're performing them, but they're performing them at the Northwestern University. And evidently they've had some pretty good results, which you would think, since there's been a boatload of cancer in people I know, that you couldn't do that, that already would have metastasized somewhere else, meaning spread. But evidently...
That's stage 4.
Well, evidently they... It hasn't, and they've had some pretty good results. So this person's insurance company evidently alleged they were going to pay for it, and at the end of the day, said they're not going to. So now, but guess what Northwestern's charge for this is? That they want to up the insurance company or a GoFundMe page. Guess what it is? Either one of you guys.
This isn't the university, though.
This is the Northwestern Hospital.
This is the hospital.
What are you talking about? They're part of the university. They're a nonprofit. They don't pay a water bill. It's part of the university. It's part of Northwestern University.
How many digits do you want me to guess, Tom?
Well, they're talking about 1.5 million.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say 1.5 million.
Yeah. So, but me, with my cost accounting background.
Okay, hold on. John's on a roll. Where's the S&P going to be?
Oh, I'm
going
go there, Greg.
Oh, damn it.
What do you think? I mean, I'm going to say that the surgeons that do this and the people that attend are all on salary at Northwestern. So they don't get a nickel more for doing this operation. The operating room is, you're going to have it for a day. So if you take all the costs involved in that for a day, let's say it's $50,000. It's high. So you're going to keep somebody there for, you know, 2-3 weeks probably. First few days, you know, you're going to be intensive care all over them. After that, hopefully things go well, and not so much. Where the hell is the $1.5 million coming from? Just asking.
They figure they're going to get marked down 80%, so they want to do... Nothing's transparent about that stuff.
They want $1.5 million from a GoFundMe page, is all I heard.
Yeah.
That's what they want. Now whether the price that goes to the insurance company is $2 million and they drop it down to $1.5 million or something, but that's the number they're talking about.
My friend Bob was very lucky to have a very advanced CAR T therapy for cancer, and we saw the bill at the end, and it was 3.5. You know, you look at it, and by the end of it, after his insurance and all that stuff, he had to pay $1,600.
Well, but somebody
then,
paid.
I don't know. I think there's negotiated stuff behind doors that we don't see, and I don't think it was even close to that. But at the end, he didn't even have to pay the $1,600 because of some other something and the deal that they worked out with the drug company that was responsible for those trials. And it's not transparent. And like you said before, they can do it because that's what's allowed, and that's what we incent. So it will continue.
Well, the point is, how do you justify it? And by the
just
way,
just like the operating,
some people do pay.
Yeah,
there was a guy. I don't know if he's still alive, but we were at Mesro. He was our liaison guy, and first name was Stan. I'll leave it at that. And Stan had a daughter. They were somewhat estranged. This guy, we're talking about somebody who got his ass kicked by the world. Daughter was somewhat estranged, and what's the disease that you can't never really get rid of, John? Is it lupus or something? It's one of those autoimmune things. She had some of that, and all of a sudden they decided she needed some transplant from something, and it was a liver or whatever it was. So Stan elects to pay for it, right? She has no insurance. So, of course, they gave Stan the full list price. And one of the laws is if you have a brother, son, daughter, whatever it is, that is out on a donor cycle and gets whacked by a car, and they want your loved ones or your liver or heart or whatever the hell it is, because that's how you get transplants usually, motorcycle accidents, and they want it, you can donate it. Now, you can't get a dime. You can't even get enough money to bury whoever the hell it is. You know, like $10,000 off the top. And you'd say, well, you shouldn't be selling body parts. I mean, we get that part. I think most people get that part. But along the process, Stan ended up paying like $230,000 for the liver. By the time it got from the whoever took it out to the transport to all the other crap, and you know, keeping it fresh. And he ended up paying over $200,000 for the organ. And the person whose organ it was didn't get a dime. And he paid for the full surgery and everything. So the guy, I think this cost him, I don't think it cost him $1 million, but it was close. And like a year later, he got caught in the Bernie Madoff thing. So this poor guy. You know, but how, you name me how a hospital can justify, remember the babies, they were the conjoined twins, it was like 5 years ago, John? Remember that?
Yes.
Where they wouldn't operate on them. They were here in a Catholic hospital, right? And the Catholic hospital would not operate on them because evidently they couldn't just separate them and they'd both be okay. There was only one heart, one liver, so one of them was going to die.
Yeah.
And they shipped them off, I think, to Pittsburgh. And they did this huge, you know, 22-hour operation and saved one of them, and one of them died. I mean, you know, there's only one heart, one liver. I mean, I'm not a medical person. I think the tab on that was like $2.5 million. The people donated. How do you get the $2.5 million? I mean, granted, it's a huge deal, but the people are all on salary. It's not like you gave everyone a $400,000 bonus for doing it. I don't think, did you? I mean, everybody. How do you get that number?
No. Well, I'd like to return to the story about your niece's spouse just for a minute, and what she's up against in. You know, the teaching profession.
Yeah, I mean, what are we paying for? This came after watching the commercials in the morning about the some Hispanic kid who scored these. I don't know. The Pritzkers own a bunch of charter schools.
They fund, I think.
Yeah, well, this is one.
They may actually operate them too.
This is one on the northwest side. So the kid is Hispanic. Seems like a nice kid. Who plays football and something else. But he also really, his brother evidently was real smart too. So the kid gets something like 1480 in the SAT. And that's not good enough. So he takes it again. He gets like a 1560 or something, which is pretty friggin' good, right? He might have been. I think he might have been born here. It didn't sound like English was his second language, but his parents came in, and they, you know, they both work the usual routine, and he's got a full ride to Stanford. I mean, I don't get the part where other people you're shoving people through. They just how do you 16 or 20 grand a year? Somebody's getting paid to educate some kid, not educate him. Just, you know, the parents don't care. They don't, but she was telling me nobody cares if they show up late. Nobody cares if they take a day off a week. Nobody calls the parent. I mean, it's something you wouldn't believe. It's so much different than our era. You know, you assume the parents don't care, but you don't know that. But if you never give them a report card, how do they know how the kid's doing? How do they know if he's even showing up? I mean, I don't get it. I just, is it the parents to blame? Who's to blame?
Well, you know, I used to occasionally give an assignment in English 101. At the community college where I taught, because I knew it was difficult for a lot of the students that were there to actually show up and be there on a regular basis, given what they had going on in their lives. So the assignment would be write a 3-page essay in which you describe what kind of obstacles you encounter in pursuing your certificate, you know, whatever program you're here to complete, and include things like family responsibilities, because I know a lot of these people are single moms, you know, with kids, and they've got daycare issues. They've got, you know, problems with ill family members. They've got, you know, static at home. You know, some of them were homeless because they've been kicked out by their parents, and all these things that they had to overcome. But the thing I remember most vividly when I read these essays is the kind of profile I established in my head. It probably unjustified, just anecdotal, but how many Hispanic women were getting absolutely no support at home in their otherwise stable families, because their parents had no particular interest in their daughters going into higher ed in the first place, and wasting their time and money when they should be out getting married and having jobs and contributing to the family's income. I was just kind of blown away by how so many of these essays fell into that template for young Hispanic women. And I thought, God, you know, with that kind of a culture opposing you, I was amazed so many of them actually did become dental hygienists or, you know, automotive workers or whatever, because they were getting absolutely no confidence building at home at all. And it used to just kind of stupefy me how hard what they were doing really was, because I never had any kind of experience like that. My parents were pushing me, you know, as I was glad they did, you know. But that stuck with me, and I think that's one of the problems we have in, you know, our unregulated immigration policy for the last, you know, several decades, is that we have, you know, kind of staffed our schools with a lot of students whose families really don't care if they're there or not, and would just as soon they not be there, probably, you know, as they go higher up the food chain in academia. We couldn't find replacements for Spanish language teachers, you know, for tenure track jobs, good paying jobs, because we couldn't. They would have loved to hire somebody with a Hispanic name who was, you know, has Spanish as a first language, English as a second, to become a professor of Spanish. And we couldn't find any candidates who had at least a master's in the Spanish language.
But I don't get, Jen, I don't know how often you talk to, once in a while, I mean, I don't talk very often, but we had some listeners, maybe not so much now, or maybe they do, but don't call in like they used to. We had some people listen to the show from the UK. And I would talk once in a while. They'd call up and... I even use, what did I use? Skype? I used something, I don't know, something I haven't used in a long time. And I talked to a couple people, and they were, you know, I look at you know, even a Harry Truman education. And my uncles and people in my family that made it to you know, I'm going to say as soon as they could quit at 16, they did. I would take anybody today, that not, you know, not anybody, but I would put them down against any of these people. And I'm going to say I would not take a sophomore in high school here and match him up against somebody from the UK at that level in terms of basic math, basic punctuation, basic reading, basic history, basic anything like that, and have our people here think that they after sophomore year over there. I mean, some of my people I knew from the UK, my aunt was from UK. I mean, these people are like, they turned out to be brilliant engineers. They left high school and like, the, you know, to go fight whenever, and they came back, took some classes, did a bunch of reading, and all of a sudden they're designing stuff. I mean, there's nothing that says by the age of 16 you can't know all that stuff. You should have the basics, know how to read, know how to progress yourself on your own. If you, I don't think we're teaching that at all, are we?
Not in the public system, Tom. It's a war between, there's two kind of polarly opposed philosophies. One is retention, which is the study of how to not only attract students into institutions, into the system, but to keep them there and not have them, you know, fall off the wagon and disappear next semester. So retaining students is income. This is money in the bank. And if you have bad retention numbers, you have a failing system. The other side of it is outcomes. And outcomes is, you know, you assess the performance of students at the end of a course or at the end of a program. And, you know, we had to do that in the English department. We had to have an exit exam or a portfolio submitted at the end that was graded by people anonymously, not your individual instructor. And that determined whether you actually got credit for the class or not. So you've got that on the opposite side of, did you learn anything in this class? Retaining you was nice, but if you didn't learn anything, why did we bother wasting your time and your money?
Well, if you didn't learn anything and you get an F, that's the way it goes. You shouldn't be not learning anything and getting an A.
Right. Well, now what that's morphed into is, you know, everything now in the public schools, certainly in Chicago, is measured in graduation rates. It seems to be the only positive that they can ever point to. And the way you get higher graduation rates is by making sure that you've got students who maybe showed up for one class period and didn't flunk out at the end. Well, one sure way to make sure they don't flunk out is not to test them. So that'll boost your graduation rates. But it won't give you a student body that knows, you know, how to read a sentence or determine what a sentence is.
Well, I just, when you look at what you're trying to do as a country, and what you're looking to do in, say, the Chicago area, because you and I are, and we talk about it probably more than people who listen to Mother Rose maybe want to hear, but it's not about the Chicago area. It's about an area that, you know, had a bunch of employment opportunities, you know, to the point where a boatload of people came up from the South to work here, and then all that seems to have wandered away. And in terms of, you know, sometimes it's the companies that screw the people in a lot of ways. That's why I want to touch on, even though we talked about the market, we'll talk some more in a bit, but up this much, but it hasn't really changed. It's right about the same number. It starts to move, I'll let everybody know. It's what is the human capital that people can sort of count on? And when somebody wants to come here to Chicago for a business, I mean, you want power, which we don't have as much as we used to. You want water, which we still do. You want all those kinds of things. You want a safe environment, which actually, yeah, we might touch on that too. It seems like these guys are doing a little better. Murders and shootings are way down. I'm not so sure that when the mayor, who I have, you know, no real love for, hired this police chief, and you gotta be careful when you generalize. It looked like just another black guy that he had to hire, and no white guy had a chance, basically, is what most people thought. Yet my elves in the police force said, no, this guy's like really good. And I don't know, all of a sudden now I'm hearing about people are getting arrested, Jen. Every weekend it seems like there's way less than the year before. Still too many, but I wonder if maybe we don't have a keeper with this guy. What do you think, just briefly, before we get back on the other subject?
Well, I hope, because, you know, he's certainly doing a lot more with fewer police.
Yep, yep.
I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. Because, the number of police it just continues to drop, and they're not replacing them. So if there's any uptick in safety, and that's that I have to put an asterisk after, because I think there's generally more lawlessness everywhere I go.
We're on the lower end. Yeah, there's no way. We need to get some people.
I mean, many more opportunities I see now where I wish there were a policeman or several nearby to see what was going on.
The traffic is out of
control. That's just a pipe dream. You know, I'm not going to get there. But if there's a downward push in violent crime or murders, I would say that's a plus.
I don't think he has anywhere near the personnel to start having two people in traffic every square mile getting the losers doing the stuff they're doing.
Of course not. And I don't know if we ever will. I mean, I don't. The political winds haven't blown back enough yet for that to happen. So all it's going to mean is a bigger tax bill, which is the last thing you want if you want to keep people living in the city.
Well,
so
you'd rather have a bigger tax bill than get killed. But I was on the Stevenson maybe 10 times last week. I don't know why. Well, one of the reasons is my significant other's in Orland, but I saw more shoulder riding, more lawlessness, motorcycles ducking me. I did not see a squad car in, I'm going to say, 20 individual trips, 15 miles on that express. I did not see a squad car. If you go to Columbus, Ohio, you go to Milwaukee, you go to any place in a normal state, you can't go a mile without seeing somebody. They're all over the place. Now, why can Columbus afford it and we can't? Why does... You know, in Ohio, they actually do a policeman and do crap. I don't get it.
Well, the Chicago police, who don't patrol the interstates, have certainly more than enough to occupy them off the interstates.
Well, I get it, but I mean, you don't want to generalize and just throw everybody in under the bus. But the weird part is, all this crap's going on that is amazingly dangerous. Nobody's ever there, and the minute there's an accident where somebody's laying on a sidewalk with his guts all out, all of a sudden, there's 15 squad cars that can sit there for 8 hours BSing with each other. Where do they come from? Where are they? And all of a sudden, they're there, and they're happy to sit there for 8 hours and do nothing. You know, there's a couple of guys that are, obviously, the forensic people. The rest of them are just standing there.
It's just crisis management. You know, that's what it's becoming. And that's bad for the public perception of what the police are for. If they only show up when there's, a mass shooting or, 40 car crash on the expressway or something.
But you
need cops for other stuff too.
Well, you wonder, John, whatever topic you look at, like this morning, I kick up, and it's not all me, grinding again. It seems like I end up always grinding against the current administration, because the last three or four I just think are totally inept. How did, in the midst of all this stuff, hopefully Mike was going to call in and talk about Pakistan and India, in the midst of all this stuff, tariff negotiations, trade agreements, couple of wars flying. How does our guy find the time to talk to the people at Qatar about them giving him a 747 for the new Air Force One and not using either the one we have or the one we've had so many change orders that Boeing's up to $12 billion and they still can't get it out the door? How is it all of a sudden now, and they're going to give this to Trump after he's out of office? They're going to give the guy a 747? How does that even become part of a president's day, thinking about something like that?
Oh, it's more important. How does it become part of the news cycle?
What?
How does it become part of the news cycle?
It's a pretty big deal when your president gets a private gift of Air Force One when he's got one. He's flying around him every day. It's perfectly fine. This thing must be outfitted for a Persian king, and he likes that better or something. I mean, how is that even on the table?
Well, when you're dealing with that kind of money, what's to discuss?
Well, what do we owe Qatar now for this gift for him?
Well, what the price of a jumbo jet is, right?
Yeah, I mean, how do you make that kind of this whole thing is appalling to me. You know, people running bitcoins out of the White House, for God's sake. People trading ahead of the market. And I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, or whatever it is. It's appalling to me, and yet, it seems. How do you even have the time to do? Isn't the presidency like a full time job? It appears that congressman isn't a full time job. You can find the time to trade all day. How do people get to do that? I mean, I trade for people all day and watch their stuff. I don't have time to play golf 4 days a week. How do these other guys get to do it?
Well, we're the wrong profession.
We are absolutely somehow we're the part that goes over the fence last, as my grandmother used to say, right? But how do you now? We've got this at the end of the day. Where do you think all this stuff lands? Let's say we end up at the end of the day. We end up with after you know these guys running around the world and declaring victory everywhere. At the end of the day, we end up with this 10% tariff with a few places with a little bit more or more. So anyway, so let's say we're going to end up with 10% and 30%. That turns out to be a tax of $300 to $500 billion a year, maybe six. In one sense, John, I think these guys are genius because the way they read the schmucks that the American population appears to have become. If they would have attempted to do that through income tax, sales tax, or Social Security tax, they'd have gone nowhere. And yet now everybody thinks it is exactly like Tom Sawyer's fence. Everybody thinks that they're doing us a favor by raising our taxes on this stuff. Are we that stupid? Can we be that stupid?
Well, I never thought tariffs were any kind of a revenue stream that you could bank on or, you know, use to balance the books. If it's a bargaining tool, and, you know, the question always
Back up a second. Why do you say that? We have a president who says we used to balance the books on tariffs.
Well, he can say that, but that is not how tariffs are designed to work. I mean, they have any kind of a design to them. They're an extortion scheme more than they are a revenue stream.
All right, well, wait a minute. We have up until...
I mean, they're last resort kind of...
You know, up until...
Not, you don't break somebody's leg, but you bend their finger back.
All right, up until last year, the U.S., would get $67 billion a year in tariffs. We've always had tariffs of some kind. And various and sundry. We've got them on sugar. We've got them on timber. We've got them on things that we protect here. Sugars, why do you think that when you go to the store, I don't know if people notice this, if you go to buy Coca-Cola, they now have those stuff in the little bottles that are imported from Mexico. Those are made with sugar and not high fructose corn syrup. And they cost a lot more. And a lot of people are buying those. They claim, A, they taste better. B, a lot of people don't want to be drinking high fructose corn syrup. The reason why they're manufactured in Mexico is because we have an import quota and a huge tariff on sugar. So you can't make it here, basically, without making it a lot more expensive. But anyway, we have... So that number, depending on where they land on this 10 to 30% in these places, this year is going to be somewhere between 380 and 660. And I think at 500, it will eclipse the entire amount of corporate income taxes. How many people know that, John? Did you know that? I think you probably did.
Well, it's a shocking number.
Yeah, so how does everybody say, no, it's not going to affect me? For God's sake, it's going to affect you. How could it not? I mean, we're talking about the single biggest tax increase this country has ever had. It didn't go through Congress, and people are too dumb to realize it's a tax. It's genius on these guys' part. Absolutely genius. If you look at the debt clock here, they have future tariff tax revenue. Now, last year, the actual was $67 billion. Future tariff tax revenue is $661 billion. I don't think it's going to be that high, especially if we...
Well, it can't, and the idea was never you could bank on 145% tariffs with the Chinese.
I'm talking about, Dan, our total import number is 383. So go off that. 10% is $380 billion. 15% is 500 and something. If it's 15%, you're almost there. Total corporate tax revenue is 522. And they're thinking of cutting that with the new tax bill. So do you think everybody in this country, if you went out and asked them, would you like to see a new tax world where corporate taxes go down even from the pissing 8% or wherever they are, the total tax thing, where they go down and your taxes go up $500 billion? The answer would be, I think, no. And what percentage do you think is even thinking about that in their brain today? 10% to 1%.
Well, and you got that message mixed with nobody under 200,000 income a year, will pay any income tax. You know, I don't know how that's going to work.
What's that? It's not going to work that way. You know, that's not going to work.
No, but that's what's in the air.
Yeah, and so what you just have, I mean, if you would have told people that your sales tax we're gonna have a national sales tax of 6%, that's gonna get us to the same spot. Can you imagine the outrage? It's the same thing, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm more interested to see what happens, you know, in the negotiations that will come out of this.
That's the beauty, though. They've got you focused on the negotiations. So look what China's down to. This morning, and Greg, you know, texted me early. He said, "We've dropped the tariff on China from 120 something to 30. It's a cause for celebration, which it appears to be. But what really has happened? It's gone from 0 to 30. It's all high percent stuff,
right? And it's enough. You know, it's got to be enough to keep them interested in getting it down.
Ooh.
They don't want. They can't deal with 30% tariffs at the rate they're going, Tom.
But I mean, there's going to be some capitulation on their end in terms of pricing. I get that. But there's also going to be
and other stuff.
Right, but there's also going to be people here to use the opportunity to raise the prices on stuff made here. Nobody mentions that, right? How many? If you look at, I mean, I'm a Milton Friedmanite. Everybody knows. Immortal words of Milton Friedman. Well, two words is, inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon, which people think not here. Oh no, it's a supply issue problem. The other is, inflation is the cruelest tax there is. And we're going to inflate some more with these numbers. We have a population. I mean, it's right on this debt clock thing. I know I go through this more than I should, but it's every time everywhere you go, it just kind of reinforces the damn thing. I'm trying to scoot this over here. I think we have the numbers on the page are median income $44,000 of a person, median income $2,000, $31,000. So we're up, what, 35%? Median new home, 163 in 2004, 14 now. Average price of a car, 22,000 in 2000, 48,000 now. I'm going to say college education. What do you suppose it was in 2000, Jen? 18, 20. Now it's 75. We're not even close to keeping up. But now we're going to drop inflation on top of people. We're going to blame on COVID. And now we're going to drop inflation on them in terms of tariffs. And we're going to blame it on the Chinese. I mean, could we be dumber as a population than we are collectively? By the way, just as an aside, we kicked this around back at, I don't want to go into too much on the names of this. When you see how this stuff kind of happens, and maybe the administration has seen this, there's, if you look at the top five advertising companies, and I'm, you know, not to go into much of the detail here because it's clients involved. The number one company is, I don't know who the hell they are. Number two is this OMC, and number four is this IPG. So there's like six big advertising companies. These are worldwide advertising companies, advertising and marketing. Well, I'm going to say last fall sometime, OMC makes a bid for IPG, at a price that's supposed to be $35. So, of course, there are people that have a lot of stock in this IPG, some of which are clients. And so the stock lands here. And if the price is supposed to be $35 that everybody's told, well, OMC starts sneaking down. So now IPG is $25, not $35. We did some put protection on some of it, but everybody was kind of a believer. But still, we did some, and the people that have the IPG that are here are really bright. They're really cool. But the stock is now down to $25. So the... All of a sudden, last week, they get their Justice Department approval. Now, Janice, the thing that you might say to yourself, self, what's the problem between two taking over four? Well, now maybe they become one, and just like the airline business, now you have no defense, if you're the Justice Department, for not letting one take over three now just so they can, quote, compete, right? There's this crazy piggy move up on this. Well, last week the place announces 2,000 people being laid off, and they're going to move massive amounts of their work over to India. So,
what did their stock go to then?
It's still kind of the same, but the point is everybody's now laid off, and so if they hire 2,000 people in India, where does that count in the Trump equation? Not Trump, whoever's in president. Where does that count? How's that even counted? Now is that now become an import of services that's not tariffed? If the place pays for it through like their Chinese account, is it not even counted as that? And where the hell are these 2,000 people supposed to go? I mean, but and now the fact that you and I are paying more for everything from China and all these other places in terms of taxes, does that make it easier or harder for these people to find a job here? I don't know. Is 30% enough for you and I to put up a widget factory that and you just mentioned it earlier. Would we now say, okay, the tariff out of China is not 120, where we were going to build this thing and make the motors for seats and cars, for instance, which I think come from China. We're going to do that here. Well, now at 30%, are we still going to do that here? And now you just said it a minute ago. Negotiations are ongoing. It might go down to 10. Now, are we really going to do that here? The answer is no. Nobody's going to do that if you can't count on what the numbers are. And secondly, what about the 2,000 people who just got shit canned? what about them? Where are they? This factory that they're now supposed to be able to go work in is not going to be there. I mean, what are we doing? The plus, if we're worried about antibiotics and stuff coming out of India, what if we have 200,000 people in India working call centers for all the big monopolies here, like the gas companies? What if they say we don't like the U.S.? We're cutting off their internet. Well, how many people here can't even function? And what are we? Is it, other than enriching themselves? What is the plan here for people in government? And I use that term, Democrat and Republican. What is the plan? Is there one?
You tell me.
I mean, it appears not to be.
We need a new Justice Department, doesn't it?
We need something. I mean, yeah. But I mean, that all started with Ronald Reagan. We're not going to do any antitrust. We love mergers. Well, how many different since Dutch? We've had what, 16 years of Democrat, 16 years of Republican, and still every murder is a good murder, right? Oh God! If we let two get together with five, we sure as hell got to let three get together with one, don't we? Now we have a track record. Now all of a sudden, hey, we only got two. Whose idea was that? Oh, I don't know. How did we get there? How did we get there? I mean, look at the airlines now. How many are left? Three, four? Because everybody had to take somebody else because somebody else took somebody else.
Who ever would have thought that antitrust would have national security implications? Of course, the smart ones probably did. But
yeah.
I don't know how many smart ones are left.
I mean, can you get anywhere? I mean, I don't... I can't. It seems to me I don't see anybody who seems to have a brain cell working in Congress on either side saying, at least in this area, they're overwhelmed maybe by the traffic coming out of the White House. Maybe it's just they're overwhelmed. They can't get their word out to someplace or whatever it is. But it doesn't appear that I'm not sure what is going on other than a lot of people really are enriching themselves. You don't see anything. Nothing's happened in the medical area that we talked about there that I can see. What about you? I mean, that's where the money is.
The latest executive order about slashing pharmaceuticals, I'll be interested to see how that goes and how that schedule is determined and who benefits and who doesn't benefit. So,
well, Biden 2.5 years ago listed 10 drugs that are going to be that they're going to make negotiate on Medicare. Did any of that ever come to fruition?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, I know people on Medicare that are buying Eliquis, the price hasn't come down a nickel. And they're 18 years, or 17 years into their patent. How much more do you need?
It was just press releases. Nothing ever happened.
And we're talking about tariffs on penicillin and stuff coming from India. Okay, where's the markup? Is the markup here or there? If it's coming in here at $2 a shot, and you put a 30% tariff on it, okay, it's $260. What's the shot cost you when they put it in your ass in the hospital? 200. So how much have we damaged them?
Well, a year ago, I thought the situation with pharmaceutical advertising had just reached ludicrous proportions. And in the last month, Tom, just what I, you know, see on my consumption of TV just blows my mind. It's so much worse than it was a year ago.
It's so much worse. It is so much worse.
And, you know, drugs that I've never heard of, hearing about for the first time, with the same, you know, kooky, you know, off-kilter commercials that have nothing to do with the drug or the disease, and a, you know, an ever longer list of side effects. And it's this, looks like the same advertising firms cranking this stuff out. And it's an assault now that's it's like twice as bad as it was a year ago. In terms of the time between, you know, slots on any kind of rerun sitcom or anything else, and for the you know, audience, you know, level, say above 60 or even above 50 or 40 now. And I'm talking about the programming. So, you know, all the reruns from the 70s and 80s that are featured on some of these channels now, it's nothing but pharmaceutical advertising.
Unbelievable. For those that don't even remember, when did the ban on advertising pharmaceuticals on TV get overturned? Was it 15 years ago? It wasn't that long ago.
No, I think within 20 years, I think.
So if you were to ban those guys from TV and radio, I would bet that the price of a Major League Baseball player would go down 20%. Every one of these places, especially sports, because they're all over sports. When
you have a lot fewer television channels.
Well, when Viagra and what was the other one? They always
Levitra.
They never
Cialis and all.
Yeah, Cialis was Cialis, the Weekender, because I remember those because they had the beautiful lady with the incredible luggage. Remember, and then the guy just had his little leather satchel, and she brought the stuff for the weekend, the clothes and the stuff. When they went off, they both went off patent. I think it was $45 million to the NFL. Some huge number, more than that maybe. It had to be the same thing to CNBC. I mean, these are massive advertisers, and well, I mean, the ones now, most of them are for skin disease and stuff, right? And diabetes and the fat cell drugs.
Well, diseases I never heard of. Now it was like,
well, we're lucky enough we don't have a lot of them are for skin diseases, which I think are pretty tough if you have one.
But clearly there's been lots of money being spent on studies and research and pharmaceutical testing. I don't know how deep the testing goes these days. I suspect not very deep, because you can't keep up with the number of drugs that are coming out to counter the effects of other drugs, to counter the effects of some disease. It's become it's a humiliating thing for this country to have mass programming of this kind.
Well, I think it is too, and we have mass amount of money spent on medical care, and I don't think the care is that good. Individual advancements are dramatically terrific, but hey, we got to go to break here. We'll bring on Audrey. SP Futures up 177, NASDAQ Futures up 806. We've had a little runs to the upside here and a little bit down, but basically we're right where we started the show. I mean, we were up 800, now we're up 805. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Mm, yeah.
Hello, what face, Dr. Jack. I'm talking about Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 176. If you haven't seen the market today and you're long stocks, well, with a few exceptions, you're doing pretty darn good. NASDAQ futures up 799. We've got the individual stocks. We've got American Express up 11. We got Apple up 12. So much no more Apple under $200. It's 211. Caterpillar up 20. This is we went from no tariffs to 121% to 30%, and we're celebrating. So I guess if you do the math there, you're happy. European stocks are up a little bit, but not as Maersk, the big transporter, is up 12%, which makes sense because the last couple of weeks the amount of ships on the water were not so high. But the DAX now is up 173, more than it was before. That's 0.7. FTSE up 55.6. CAC around up 118. That's 1.5. So for whatever reason, Kekron is leading the pack over there. Over in Asia, we had Hong Kong stocks are up almost 3%. They're up 681, 2.98. Nikkei up 140.4%. Shanghai up 27.8. So Hong Kong leading the way there. A big move up in interest rates. We've got 10-year up 9%. So careful on that with this market running up so much with these things. I've got the 30-year 4.89, so pushing 5%. So be careful on these rates. Bund up 9%, 9 basis points, 2.64, not percent, basis points. Japan is up 10 basis points, 1.45. I've never seen a move out of like that out of Japan. So normally, when interest rates make the shot to the upside, you don't get it the same day where bonds are flying down and stocks are flying up. So might want to be careful about that just a little. Not saying sell, but just keep your eye on it. Oil up 237, 63.39. A long way. Last Monday morning, it bottomed out at 55.50. So that's like a 14% move in oil you made this week if you bought that bottom last Monday. Brent up 231, 66.22. Natural gas down a penny, 377. Gold, whack, whack, whack on the gold, which is unfortunate because we have people in gold. Hit it down like $80. Now my machine is balking here a little bit. Because the dollar is racing to the upside here, as maybe you might expect. Because the doctor's dollar, gold's down $111, 32.32. Silver down 56 cents, 32.35. Foreign exchange, this is kind of the one of the key ones. Dollar is, we've got the euro is down to 111, was 113. That's like a 2% move. That's massive in a couple days. British pound, not as much, 132. It was at over 133. We have first traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:39 a.m. on May 12th, 2025. As far as traffic, current inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne Interchange at 36 minutes, outbound at 43. Inbound on the Dan Ryan from 95th to JB at 24 minutes, outbound at 11. Let's look at weather real quick. 58 degrees at Midway and 56 at O'Hare. Heating up quick out there, high of around 78 today. Continuing our trend from the weekend with mostly sunny skies. Tonight, though, scattered showers and a low of 61. Down in Phoenix, 79 degrees right now, breezy with a high of 100 degrees a day, the first 100 of the year, it seems. Let's go into sports briefly. MLB yesterday, Cubs played against the Mets and lost 6-2. Cubs at 23 wins this season and 18 losses. White Sox, though, beat Marlins yesterday, final score of 4-2. Sox back on Tuesday against Cincinnati. And finally, with the NBA semifinals yesterday, West semifinals saw Thunder beat Nuggets 92-87. And in the East, Pacers outpaced the Cavaliers 129-109. Tonight, Knicks at Celtics at 6:30 p.m. and Timberwolves versus Warriors at 9 p.m. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed, yeah.
Hey, Aud. I have a question for you and John. Out of all the jobs the Pope has, and of all the struggles they have with, you know, whatever crime and sin and everything else there is in the world they're supposed to be dealing with, I'm going to say the toughest job any Pope has ever had is to bring the White Sox back to some sort of mediocrity. What do you think, John? I mean, he's a Sox fan. I got to believe on his list that's got to be the toughest thing to do.
You know, they couldn't let him get away with that question. The first day I thought, why did I not think this was going to come, you know. Poor guy has to weigh in on that, of all things.
What do you think, Aud?
He's living up on his plate, Tom.
You've got Nancy.
Oh, Nancy, hey. So if he gives.
Yeah, so I think he should personally take care of the Bears myself. Forget the Sox. Just let's get to the Bears.
Oh, God. Did you see the the thing of him on the altar, instead of the wine and bread and wine, he's got the ballpark dogs and an old style.
I didn't do that. But I agree with John. First thing I heard was, is he a Cubs fan or a Sox fan? I thought, oh my God, can't he just be a Chicago fan? Nope.
Somebody had him as a Cub fan. His brother still lives here. His brother called the station and said, no, he's a Sox fan.
Yeah. Well, and the next thing was that his childhood home was for sale, and all of a sudden it's taken off the market. So,
God. My buddy Bill Murphy is a Mendel monarch because he went to Mendel, which is Augustinian, then he went to Villanova, which is Augustinian. So Bill's still irate that Mendel closed the year after they won the Prep Bowl. They always had a great football team. Well, all the schools did in those days. But so, Nance, what's up in your world? What's going on? Interest rates this morning. I mean, everybody's celebrating the world here. I don't think you are with this 10-year rate up 50 basis points or 78. These rates are going back up again. So that's not good for use, is it?
No, it's not good for me. And then it's no good for really anybody. But I understand that this is going to be the new norm. So I can adjust. It's just that the rest of the world will not adjust. However, did you get if the stocks really skyrocket today, the bonds are falling. So that should help. Right? The 10 years to go down.
No, bonds going down means the rates are going up. That's not what you want.
No, the 10-year bond is what it's based off of usually.
I know. The bond going down means the rate goes up. Bonds are going down today with stocks going up. I've got the 10-year rate up 76 basis points. It's a huge move. It's almost 2%.
Well, that's going to be huge. But usually if the stock market's doing well, the bond market does poorly.
That's been a phenomenon of the last few years that people think, but it's not really the way.
I know they don't correlate. I mean, I know that.
Let's put it this way: they always did, and they're supposed to. But last few years, not so much, because the Fed has been very actively involved. But think of it, think it through. The Bodius Southsiders, if interest rates go up, which means bonds are going down. Interest rates up, good or bad for stocks?
I don't know. I'm trying to find the 10-year. It's always not good, but...
By the way, 10-year is TNX. All you have to do is type in TNX. 30-year is TYX. But, so,
oh, I know. I was expecting it. When I heard it, I thought, ooh, this is not good at all. Yep, Tom, you are right. See, this is why you got to go to Stacks and Jacks.
Well, it has gotten muddied over the years, but if for instance, 10-year rate went to 10%, would that mean more people would put money in bonds versus stocks? Because they essentially compete against each other for people's dollars. Now, in the last 10 years, the Fed is totally screwed that up. To where your interest, they bought so many things that your interest rate was artificially low. It didn't even make it through inflation for you. So people are into stocks that never would have been. And maybe, hopefully, they'll never get nailed on it, but someday they might. I mean, there's people that are 80 and 90 that have 90% of their portfolio in risky stocks. Because God knows, why would you want it in the bank up until the last couple of years? What's happened with the markets and with the Washington's manage of the markets, I'll say Washington and not Democrat or Republican, has really got an awful lot of investors thinking ass backwards. But I don't know, will it return to the mean? When I first started on the floor, there were no SPOOs. There were no S&P futures. The Kansas City value line was the first one, and that didn't start till, I'm going to say it was at least a year into the business, maybe a year and a half. So when you were standing there in the pit and you looked to see something that let you know which way the market was going to go, they had just started trading the 30-year bonds on the Board of Trade. You watched the bonds. If bonds went down, stocks went down. Bonds went up, stocks went up. This is back in the Volcker era. So if whatever Volcker was doing, if he was doing it correctly, and if bonds went down, meaning interest rates were going up, it means stocks were going down. But now we've got all this other stuff trading and an awful lot of maneuvering back and forth, it has become somewhat clouded. But I think both of you probably understand that if interest rates doubled, it wouldn't be good for stocks. I don't think. Would you yeah. agree with that?
Well, but wasn't the run-up in stocks sort of hand-in-hand with the collapse of interest rates? I can't think of the exact time frame.
Yes, absolutely. When interest rates went flying down, which means the Fed was pouring money into the system, not only did putting money in fixed income be bad, meaning everybody wanted to be in the market because it was going up, the amount of money in the system gave people all kinds of money to buy stocks, right? So it was like a two-edged sword. It's gotten so jumbled. If you taught a class like this, people will be looking at you and go, what are you talking about? It doesn't always work. I mean, but it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, if interest rates doubled, I don't think stocks would go down by half, but they go down a chunk, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
This is going to be a bad day.
Well, for mortgage stuff.
Bond market, yeah, for the mortgage stuff, yeah.
I mean, you're up almost a full tenth of a point in the TNX today.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say whatever your mortgage rates were, they're higher now.
So this is, well, today's going to be a non-ringing phone day.
Yeah. So now if you lock somebody in last week, they're still good though, right?
They're so good, yeah.
How long are you good for?
As long as you lock them.
But I mean, what's the normal?
Well, I'm trying to take 30-day locks. You can get 15, 30, 45, 60, 90, and then you pretty much forget it after that.
Well, how far out can you go where you have to start paying them to do it?
Whatever whatever you lock for, let's say I take a 30-day lock and I don't deliver it in 30 days, then I have to pay for every day I'm late. So it's it gets problematic. You can lose what you're making really quickly.
But what if you got a guy like John who's looking to buy a place for say $5 million, and there aren't many on the market, and he says I want to lock myself for 6 months because it takes me that long to find a place. Now does he to pay something for the six, doesn't he?
He would have to pay big time for the six, and they don't. And I'm only talking conventional loans. I'm not talking jumbos. So
okay.
Jumbos are a whole nother life story. But the I think the most you can go out is about a year. But you have to put like 10% down of. You have to put money into it, and then you have to give them a zip code you think you're going to buy into. So it just doesn't work. Like where you can just hold the property, and then just go to any one of the 50 states and buy something. It doesn't work like that.
I know Kenny Polcari, when he went buy a place a couple of years ago, he said he got a lock for like 60 days and he had to pay something. It wasn't a real lock, but he had to pay something.
You don't have to pay on 60-day locks right now. You could possibly have to, but right now you really shouldn't have to.
Well, he was from Florida. Those Florida guys, people are. So
I feel bad for the people in Tampa right now. I mean, they had a lot of speculative building going on down there, and now if you did buy in, oh my God, they're leaving like there's no tomorrow.
What happens to the places? They're even selling them?
They're trying. They try to sell them. Mortgage companies wind up having to take them back. I mean, it's a vicious cycle. But right now, Florida's getting hit really, really, really hard. So, and I would imagine the builders will go under.
I heard tell from one of the listeners that a lot of people who bought places down there for second homes from Canada are bailing. They don't want to be down there anymore. Is that just somebody talking like that, or is that actually happening?
I have not heard that.
John, have you?
I haven't heard that.
I know that a lot of people are bailing just because, assessments and taxes. Have just gone through the roof, and scrutiny of condo projects is ramping up. So how to keep your funds up to snuff for any kind of capital improvements that need to be done, because there's sinkholes and other threats facing these people all the time. I think there's a real reaction to this, and it wouldn't surprise me if people who went there to retire or to think they could have cheap living are getting out big numbers.
Yeah, that would be kind of whenever you. Nothing is, we haven't seen it in a real long time in a lot of the cities. Well, I guess some of them maybe you have, but when all of a sudden everything is for sale in real estate, that's a tough time. We haven't seen that in a while, have we, Nance? But it has happened a few times.
It has happened a few times. And if Florida got hit once before, and then people started, you know, just sticking their toe in. And now they are fully in. And with all these hurricanes and the price of the insurance going up and not being able to get anything rebuilt, it's tough down there. It's a tough, tough, tough picture down there.
If anybody, I have not looked lately, we probably should call our friend Dave Murphy, see if he wants to tell us why he lives in California. That whole area that was all burned out, is anybody, do you think anybody's gotten their insurance check and their new permits and actually started yet, Nancy?
I doubt it.
I heard in California no one's gotten started yet at all. So no one has gotten anything. They're just out, and people are now heading to Arizona like, mad. That's what I have heard. I don't know if it's true or false.
When I, way back in the day, and people aren't going to remember, are going to think I'm nuts here, which for another reason, one of my friends who I kind of helped him wiggle out of a, when I say helped him, gave him some advice on a mortgage. This has to be 25 years ago, Nance and Jen, that in California, a mortgage was not a personal debt. You could walk on a mortgage and it wouldn't even show up on your credit report. Is that?
I don't think that's true, Tom.
It was then.
25 years ago, in 2000, no.
Well, maybe it was in the 90s, but there was a time when it was not considered a personal debt.
I don't know how that could be, because they take, they take the mortgage as collateral.
Yeah, the property's collateral.
I can't say that. A mortgage on a mobile home is a personal debt. That's it. I mean, it's just, yeah. It doesn't show up in your credit report.
Unless you own the pad you're sitting on or something.
Because if you don't own the land, then it's not. You got to own the land.
Well, this guy had a spot in, this is way back, because this is a guy I know from Pullman, for God's sake. He bought this place. This is like two or three real estate crises as low, so it might have been the late 80s, 90s. And he says to me, he paid $165 for the place. He's like, he was on like Venice Beach or someplace, like two blocks from the water. And he goes, yeah, I paid $165 for this place. And then all the whole area is, and everybody's selling. I forget what the crisis was at the time. I go, how much is it worth? He goes, probably 80. I go, what, 80? How the hell could it be 80? He says, in the bank, you know, I can't afford to keep this thing up. And he goes, I can kick it to the bank and I'm just out. I said, isn't that kind of a debt? Oh, no, it's not a personal debt. So he ends up, he said, what do you think I should do? Now, me being, you know, I guess from the south side, we can all be a little sneaky. I said, Jan, do you have anybody who wants to buy it? And he goes, yeah, I got a buddy. I said, tell the buddy to bid the bank $85,000. And you give the guy $5,000 and tell him that you want an option to buy it back at $100,000. And he calls me up, and the guy's all for it. The bank gives it to the guy at 85, lets John out. 6 months later, John buys it back from the guy at 100, and 2 years later sells it for 2.25.
Well, then it's got to be, see, but it's not a land thing then. Banks can do whatever they want to do. So that's different than getting a mortgage from the, you know, one of the five big ones that I have.
I didn't even get a breakfast out of them like you and Audrey buy me once in a while.
Oh.
So you can't
even remember who's going to come on the show for the past 3 weeks.
Well, that's true. Well, you guys are, you know, I can't, you guys got your thing going. I don't know what you're.
Even in Illinois, Tom, I mean, you could, if you negotiated a deed in lieu of foreclosure where the bank took over the property for an agreed upon price, whatever the loan balance was, that could be arranged, and usually is, when there's a lot of distressed properties, that they won't pursue a deficiency judgment against, you know, the borrower for the balance, you know, whatever, you know, however much it was underwater. So if you owed 100, property's 65, they'll take it for 65 and not pursue the additional 35 as a personal judgment against you. It was always optional for a lender to do that if it were in a foreclosure. And they ended up, after a long, you know, judicial process and attorney's fees and everything else, They could still go after you. Usually, that would put you in a different bargaining position. But even in Illinois, you could, get that kind of term. In effect, I'm sure it would screw up your credit.
They do report that differently.
Yeah, yeah.
We do report it differently, and you cannot get a mortgage, I think, for 2 years if you did that.
Right, right. So it will have an impact on your credit rating, but your obligation to repay is gone.
It's gone, right. The obligation is gone.
What do you think? I mean, it's hard since you're my real estate mavens. Do you think part of these negotiations, we talk more with Russell than with you guys, kind of shifting gears on you a little bit here, Nance, but about all the amazing amount of debt owed on this Chinese real estate, and a lot of the debt, some of it was from the U.S. Do you think any part of these negotiations, are those people getting paid at all, or do you think that's totally off the table when because there's a lot of people, I think, here that have real inroads, not just to this White House, but everybody, really big companies. I think CalPERS was one of them, John. I suppose they had a lot of Chinese investments. Now, whether it's only 5% of their portfolio or not, I don't know. Do you think those people getting paid, not paid, or whatever is part of these trade negotiations?
I wouldn't be surprised. And, there's huge mortgage boycotts, among people in China, like grassroots efforts, where they're just not making payments because the property hasn't been delivered and maybe never will be completed, but the borrowers are still on the book, for the price of the apartment that they set their life savings on to buy. And enough of those people, if they're not paying, the creditors, you've got to believe that has a huge impact on trade generally. In that, none of these corporations are solvent. It probably they're bankrupt already on paper, I would bet, if none of these loans are performing or a big enough number are performing. And that has to have implications across Chinese American relations, where Americans have got their foot in the puddle too.
Well, how could that ever even who would even imagine something like that you got to pay a mortgage on a place you don't even have a chance to live in? I mean,
That's the way China handles real estate. If you buy something on spec, you're obligated, when the deal closes, even though maybe they haven't even broken ground yet. That's the competition for
the answer. If they're
back in space,
if somebody's building a new development here and you want to reserve a place, what does that paperwork look like? You put down 40 as a deposit, but
yeah, and it will be in stages, depending on whatever. When you get an architect certificate that the building is, under roof, and it's just, interior finishings or whatever, and there's construction loan, you won't close on the purchase until the thing is done, though.
But is that money in escrow, or is it
escrow?
So if you don't get it, if the guy never finishes the place, you're going to get it back.
No, that's not. It depends who owns the land. It all starts with who owns the land. If you own the land and then you're letting someone else build on it, it's your problem.
No, I'm talking about that place by Audrey where the guy's building it all and people are just putting deposits down.
That's just on a commercial bank loan right now.
Okay.
That's it. That's all that is. It's just all short-term financing. Most housing is built with short-term financing.
So if I decide I want to buy one of those places and I give the guy $50,000 to reserve my spot, that does not become money he can use. That goes into escrow for when he delivers it, correct?
Correct. Correct. That's a whole different ballgame.
All right, so what John was talking about is if you get somebody to build your own place.
Right, I did that. And my money went into escrow and the title company went under.
Then what happened?
Then you're just an unsecured creditor, right? Yes,
you just... You know what? I drove those people so nuts I got my money back.
What did you do?
I just drove them insane. I was just like, I just kept putting on my combat boots and just kept going until I got the money back. But yeah, I didn't have to go to a bank and borrow money to finish the house and close on it. I did get the money back, though. I did.
Were you like Tony Soprano that pulled his yacht up in front of the guy's place and played the music so loud they couldn't concentrate?
I pretty much just... I did get the money back. Because that was just the total... I mean, slap in the face, knocked down, stamped upon, get up out of the ground and say, all right, I'm done. I just had enough.
And there's state money set aside for those kinds of, you know, sometimes, you know, it's crooked, you know, an agent of a title company, you know, there's a defalcation, they walk away with the money, they embezzle it, there's no money left, but there's state money to handle those claims because they don't want that corner of the market ever to become distrusted enough that nobody will, you know, use it again. So it may take a while to you know, sort everything out, but there is money designated to cover those. Just like FDIC.
So I did get the money back.
Nancy, you mentioned the jumbo thing, or last question, because we got a dash. What is the breakdown, the break between a regular mortgage and jumbo these days?
Oh, Tom, I couldn't even answer that because it just depends. There's so much that goes into it. Nobody's got it. Wall Street is mainly in the jumbo market. I mean, the ones Fannie, Freddie, and all that, they really are not interested in that. They're only interested in conventional loans. They agree everyone should own a home, but it doesn't have to be a jumbo.
Well, I mean, what's their limit? What's the biggest mortgage they'll do, 800 or 900?
Yeah, it goes by zip code now.
Oh, okay. It used to be an absolute number, right?
Yeah, there used to be an absolute flat number, and not anymore. It goes by zip code. But I would say it's 700,000-800,000 in the Chicago area in general.
Where's higher? Like Winnetka or someplace? Or?
It could be. The further north you go, yeah, it could be. But like California would be higher. I mean, that's the answer to New York would be higher. Okay. That's how it would go.
Well, it goes by state.
If you're just talking in general, you can go by state, but Cook County has a limit, Will County has a limit. For Illinois, they do it by county, but then you drill down into the zip code.
Okay.
So it just depends. And then a lot has to do with the average median of who lives in the area, that kind of thing. But the bottom line is, like, for Cook County, I think it's $700,000 or $800,000 right now is the limit.
All right. It was up from, like, the six of a few years ago.
Yeah, every year it goes up. Every year it goes up. And FHA has a different limit than like, Fannie or Freddie. And the VA has a different limit than those three. So it's just, that's why it's such a hard question to answer.
All right. Well, Nance, thank you. Jan, thank you. S&P Futures is still up one. So we're almost like exactly where we came in. And S&P's up 170. NASDAQ is up 783. So it's a huge day for people that own stocks. Take a look at your portfolio up here. See if you want to protect it, not protect it. Buy more. Who the hell knows? Whatever you think. But right now, it looks like virtually everything but maybe the healthcare industry is to the moon here today. So there you go. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Okay.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
As leader of all illegal activities in Casablanca, I'm an influential and respected man.